Welcome to another edition of Always Right with Rochelle, the Right Now Coach. Today I'm delighted to be talking with Nancy Mayer Whittington. She is the co-founder of Isaiah's Promise, a support group for parents continuing a pregnancy after a severe or fatal diagnosis. Nancy is the author of the memoir For the Love of Angela. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, in full disclosure, I have to let our listeners know that I know Nancy. I got involved briefly in the process of her book publishing career when she had a manuscript, and I did a little editing, and then she went on to get it published. So I want everybody to know that up front. But since they don't know you and they don't know your book, maybe you can start by telling us what the book is about.
The book is about my experience carrying and delivering my daughter Angela, who died shortly after she was born. Kind of the insights and the reflections that came as a result of that experience, and then some of the work that I've done with a friend in the support area for couples who are experiencing troubled pregnancies.
So in the process of this really difficult situation, when did the idea for the book come about?
Well, I kept a journal throughout my pregnancy. And I've always been kind of a writer at heart, but not by profession, that's for sure. And the journaling, I recognized, was helping me.
Hmm.
And then as I reread some of the journal entries after my daughter was born and passed away, I thought maybe if I tried to put it all together into some format, it might help me in my recovery.
So then, what was that transition like between taking a journal, which is really different from a book, and translating that and your experience into a book? How did that work?
Well, part of the issues after you go through a loss, like I did, was that you have different stages that you go through,
mm-hmm.
obviously. And one of my stages was, gosh, the further I'm getting away from this, the more remote it seems, and I don't want to forget it, and I also don't want people to forget Angela. And so I thought maybe if I put it all into words and worked on it for a while, not only would it be therapeutic, but ultimately maybe it could provide some kind of comfort or some kind of, or just give some insights into someone who may be going through a similar experience, knows somebody going through a similar experience, or even just suffering from a loss. So I took my very, very, very rough manuscript and tried to work on it at night and on weekends because I have a full-time job and I have a family. And then asked around and somebody said that they knew this fabulous woman, Lander, who edits material and actually works as a life coach, and that maybe I should try to get in touch with her and see whether she would be interested in trying to take my, as I said, very kind of rough perspective and kind of move it in the direction of a book. And so that's how it started, because I don't know if you remember, but when I did send the rough manuscript to you, it was pretty rough. It was a little disjointed, and it was much stronger in the beginning than it was kind of at the end. And through your very wonderful crafting and insights and your experience as a published author, I saw my book take shape. But then, after the first editing, I put it aside for a little bit because it was still kind of intense sometimes to go back to that part of my life with as much specificity and focus as I needed to make it a working book. So left it alone for a little bit, a year or so probably, then kind of went back to it, mostly because of the work I was doing with Isaiah's Promise, the support group, was difficult trying to let people know that there was going to be a light at the end of the tunnel, and that if they would kind of open themselves up to the experience, maybe they would find that they would have something really wonderful that would happen despite the loss of their child. So having the book and being able to say to people, look at this, and you'll pick up and look at pieces of it, and that was in the back of my mind that it would be something that would be helpful. So I picked up the draft back up again, worked on it for a while, then contacted you again because at this point I thought now maybe she can actually take me to the next level and not just take something pretty rough and make it less rough. And that was great because I really saw that it was, after we worked together, that it actually looked like a book and actually worked. So that's the way. And then the publishing part of it, I don't know if you're interested in that.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, so then what happened once you had this manuscript back and you decided you were going to get it published? How did you go about that?
Well, I, at your advice, I went to Barnes & Noble and took many Saturdays to look at, you know, Publishing for Dummies and any kind of books they had on publishing to see if I could get a path that I thought would work for this particular book, and your suggestions about looking for publishers that publish memoirs or and smaller publishers, too, was very helpful. And so I came up with a list of about 10 publishers that I thought would potentially look at my book, and I sent it out to probably 7 in the space of a couple of weeks, and looking very carefully at their requirements, because that's really important. You know, if they only want 3 chapters, they only want 1 chapter, if they want just the overall view of it, to be careful to do exactly what they said. So I did that, and actually within about 2 weeks of sending it off, I got something back from a publisher, Alban Press in New York, which was so exciting because it said, "We don't normally publish this kind of material, but your writing has tweaked our interest. And although we can't guarantee anything, we would like to see the rest of the book." And for me, that was like vindication from a publishing company that I could write.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're never quite sure that if your writing is going to touch someone else, if it touches maybe family and friends, that's great, but it's not the world. So that was wonderful. And subsequently, I sent it to them, and ultimately they sent me back a very nice letter saying that it didn't fit in with their publishing schedule, but it was just nice. It said, "But we really encourage you to find a publisher for this book." And that, I think, had I gotten, like, the other 6 came back with just no signatures on them for the most part, nothing, just a little typed, you know, "Thank you for sending it. We're not interested. You know, goodbye." And so if I hadn't gotten that one, I think that kind of said, keep trying on this. That gave me kind of the push to keep looking. So sent it out to a few more publishers, and then through a friend found out about a small publisher in Indianapolis called St. Catherine Siena Press. And at that point, I waited a little bit because I had gotten, you know, 5 more rejections, and I was like, I think I need to space these rejections out a little bit because it's kind of tough just getting them all, you know, all at once. So I waited and actually got a phone call from my friend saying I met them at a publishing conference, people she knew from St. Catherine of Siena Press, and she said that I talked to the woman about it, and she would really like you to follow up. So I did, and sent it to them, and then at that point sent them the whole book because they were interested in the whole book, and probably about 3 weeks after that they called me and said, we decided to publish your book. So
wow.
That was so exciting. It was absolutely one of the most exciting days.
So now that it's out, what has changed or what's different?
About the book or about me?
What are you doing for publicity, or how has it helped your work with Isaiah's Promise?
It helped my work with Isaiah's Promise a lot. We end up, it's just a friend of mine who do this, and we end up working generally with just 1 or 2 couples a year, because we're very small, and we have we try to do a lot of support over the phone and in person with the couple. So it's been amazing to be able to start off the relationship and say, "I have a little something, why don't you, when you have a chance, go through it," and that has been great validation for the couple, and generally the women, is the person we work with primarily, where they'll go, "Oh my gosh, I thought I was crazy because this is the way I was feeling, and that's the way it was coming across in your book." And between that, and I've spoken to probably 5 or 6 or 7 groups, from religious groups to genetics counselors at the National Institute of Health, who are learning how to divulge this kind of news to people. That has been amazing because I've been able to kind of honor and keep Angela's memory alive by talking about my experience. And I've gotten so many nice letters and so many nice feedback and insights from people continuing, that it's been amazing.
That's great. Well, I want to back up a little bit to the writing process. One of the things I'm curious about is kind of when you wrote that first draft and you had your journal and you're writing a draft, how do you kind of not just recopy the journal, but kind of write about the experience? Because I think for those of us who are writing memoirs, and I've got one that I'm working on, and I have about 20 journals that I'm working with, it's very difficult to try to create a fresh story for someone when you're also working from your own your own journals.
I agree, and I think that in many ways my journal was kind of recounted the what happened in a very chronological order, and just periodically had insights or some emotion to it, so that when I was trying to translate that into some kind of a document, I recognized that I had to keep going back to that time and kind of immersing myself in that time and remembering how I felt, and how that it wasn't as clinical as the journaling sometimes came across, but there was tons of emotion running around, and that I needed to be really honest about things and not paint this lovely picture about all these wonderful insights and wrap it up really neatly, that I needed to kind of talk about how raw it was for the most part. And as a result of that, it was hard to do on a regular basis, because going back into that world was depressing at times and ultimately very satisfying, because I was able to kind of weave something through all of the different events because of the insight, obviously, that sometimes time brings with you. But it is hard, I think, just to look at something and then see if it has any life in it.
Hmm.
To see whether it's got some fire or some passion, even if the passion is pretty raw grief.
Yeah. It's
something that really makes it come alive for not only you, but for the person, the people you're hopefully writing for.
So what do you think it was or is that makes this story come alive for people?
I think it's very, it's very personal. It's very, I think I set myself out there and describe the ups and the many downs. And I don't sugarcoat it or gloss over it. And I think that makes it more real.
Yeah.
Which it was. One of my problems when I was reading literature about people losing children, they'd all been written from the advantage of time. And so they were clearly at a different path, or level, actually, than I was at the time that I was doing my journaling and picked up to pull it all together. So I found that they lacked some of the human experience that people could relate to, because they were kind of like, oh, this is God's will, and you accept God's will, and you go on. And I'm like, well, I got mad at God. I thought, God, this is that. Well, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't think, why, what were you kind of punishing me for? So I went through that whole questioning period, and I put that in there, because that was what happened. That's the way it was.
Yeah, and I remember, and I just recently reread your book again, and I think there's like a real sense of immediacy. So I think as a reader, I felt like I was going through it with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not that sense of, well, la, 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 this mm-hmm. happened and I'm a better person for it.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many people come up to me and say, I read your book and I cried through the whole thing. And I have to tell you, I'm not sure what to respond sometimes to that, because I don't want to say, wow, great. And I go, gosh, I'm sorry, but it was sad. Then they usually say, I'm not being critical. I'm just telling you what happened, And the other big thing that people have said to me is, they'll say, my sister or my friend or whatever suffered a loss, and I didn't know what to do at the time. Now I know. I can say to them, even now, how are you doing? When's the anniversary? How long has it been? You know, ask the kinds of questions, or and let them open up if they're interested in doing it. But having far more insight into that experience than just saying, well, I didn't really want to know what was going on because it was too sad, and I didn't, you know. So that sort of thing has been kind of a nice reaction from people.
Wow. Well, now I know that you have a day job. You're the clerk of court for the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, and you have kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you wrote this at night, so I'm trying to figure out in my head like how you do this. So maybe you could talk to our listeners about how you fit in writing a book with kind of this professional life and this mom life.
Well, I think I wish I had had your coaching tips and writing tips that you have on your, because that's what I kind of had to pull together on my own, or I would just go, oh, but you just have to keep writing, you know, and I found that if it's something that's really, you're really passionate about, you can stay up till midnight or 1 o'clock and you won't wake up exhausted the next day because you feel like you did accomplish something. Now, it still is hard to do, and it's still, it's nothing, you know, I didn't go off to a cabin I had to write on weekends and Saturday, I mean, at nights and in between things, and I found myself sometimes when I was writing that I was crying, so it was hard for me to write and then to kind of walk down and say, okay, time for dinner.
Hmm.
So it was hard to do, but I felt like I was kind of driven, and I had to write the book. It was such a part of me, and it was such a huge experience, and it was so life changing, and everything that it just kind of came out of me. Now, that doesn't mean that it was easy or that it flowed all the time, because it didn't. Because I can tell you, I wrote many things that ended up in the wastebasket because it, you know, I felt a certain thing at the time, but then I'd be like, where am I going with this? This isn't really part of this. This has gone on to another story or another part of my life. And I think that was one of the hardest things was I'm one of 10. I've got 9 sisters, and I grew up in a really incredible family, and I've got, you know, lots of wonderful stories that come from that background, not having that take over what I was trying to do, and promising myself that that will be my next book. But, you know, staying focused, it was hard.
Well, one of the things I wondered as I read the book, because, you know, you talk about your husband, and you talk about your daughter, your older daughter, and you talk about your family members. So I wondered, were there any kind of conversations that you had to have or anything you had to do to kind of vet your book with these folks?
Well, I did let my sisters, we go away once a year, all 10 of us, by ourselves. And so probably about 5 years ago when I had a fairly rough draft, I brought it with me and just let them read it, sort of to see if they went, or if they went, wow, or if they went, gosh, this, you should do something with it, which they ended up doing that part of it. But also to let them see some parts of it so that I didn't, to see if there was a reaction of, oh, gosh, I feel like I wasn't there for you. I didn't. There was a little bit of, but some of my sisters were like, gosh, I had no idea. I kind of knew it was going on, and especially some of my younger sisters. And they're like, but I had no idea, you know, all the things you were going through. And I was like, well, I'm not writing this so that you guys go, oh, I'm really sorry. I'm writing it because that's what happened, and I want other people to know if they go through this experience that that's pretty normal and there are things you can do. But, yeah, I did kind of send it out to them. But the hardest one was my husband because after he read the first draft, he said, I don't think I came across very well. He says, I don't think I was very supportive. And I said to him, well, in some respects you weren't, because you weren't going through it. It was me. And until she was actually born, it wasn't really that real, I think, to him. And he had different outlets, and he was also at a different stage of his faith, I think, at the time. But that was the hardest part, because, you know, then I thought, do I rewrite it a little bit to make him look better? Or do we talk it through and figure out a comfort level with it? Which we did, and I said to him, you know, I want to almost write on the front of this book a mother's perspective, because it is my view. We did not sit down and co-write this. I didn't really make allowances for what he was going through, And until it was actually published, I mean, we've had some amazing conversations after it was actually published where he was like, gosh, I didn't know this part. And then he said, but I also didn't share this part.
Hmm.
So that was, that's been a fabulous actual byproduct of the book that I'm so happy happened.
That's great. Mm-hmm. So now you mentioned a next book. Are you working on another book?
Well, sort of. I don't know if you remember, but when we were talking during the editing, we kind of both talked about sitting around the kitchen table and all the stories that you had growing up.
Mm.
And I realized that, you know, being one of 10 daughters was a very unique experience. And the fact that I still talk to all of my sisters and we still get together and our kids are all friends, that's kind of unique in this world. That is a lot more about independence and separation and striking out on your own, and that sometimes people look at that staying together as not a good thing, but we found it to be a fabulous thing. So
wow.
I've got, you know, drafts and chapters and that sort of thing going on there too.
Well, good. Now, this is the time where you get to give a tip to our listeners. So do you have a final tip for our listeners who are primarily writers trying to write books?
I would say just write. Every time you have an opportunity, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, have a notebook wherever you are and jot things down, because you will find that two or three gems in some of the stuff that you thought was worthless. But if you don't write, you'll never produce anything. So just keep writing.
Well, that's a great tip. Nancy, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, this has been fun. This has been another edition of Always Write with Rochelle, the Write Now Coach. You can find a link to Nancy's new book at my website, writenowcoach.com. Thanks for tuning in, and remember to always write.